Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios, New York City. Today, we're going to explore from health and healing the most effective herbs for women who need to balance their hormones, especially perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause. Also, we have an awful lot of people who have problems with fat, losing it, even when they exercise, even when they diet. So to help you, if you've had those problems, I'm going to show you the nutrients, what are called lipotrophic nutrients, that can help improve fat metabolism and give you energy to boot. For those who suffer from chronic constipation, there's a new therapy for it, not a new therapy in and of itself. And you've heard me mention what are called acrylamides. This is what happens when we have the browning effect, like a bagel, a roll, toast, almost a potato chip, pizza crust. Now there's new information about how that can impact your brain. And for the men, good information from the University of Bristol on fighting prostate cancer with a particular nutrient, and a lot more. Then, from our environmental segment, I was asked a question walking over to the studio today, and it was about a person who has lived in New Orleans and talked about how many people died, over 2,000, and why did it have to happen? Unfortunately, I did not have time to stop on the street, which I normally would, and answer his question, because I was only 5 minutes off from doing the show. So I'm going to answer it now. And it's not what you think. You're probably thinking it was Hurricane Katrina in and of itself. No, it wasn't. There had to be cofactors for that to have occurred. I'll discuss this today and show you why we should be very concerned when politics and economics become more important than creating a safe environment for people. My guest in the second part of our program today is Dr. Andrew Wakefield. Many of you may remember that about a year and a half to 2 years ago, I did a 6 to 7 hour special all at once at night on Dr. Andrew Wakefield. I even did 1 hour. That is a debate. I debated Brian Deere, who was his primary attacker around the world. He was running over to CNN and other places to attack Dr. Wakefield and a group of scientists who had worked on a group of children and suggested that there was a possible connection between the MMR vaccines, the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, and some of their autism spectrum conditions, including problems in their intestines. Wakefield lost his license because of his participation, and they were all, in effect, held up to public ridicule. I looked at the information, and I could find nothing that was true in the attacks against Wakefield. That's why I did this 7 hour special. Now, we are going to revisit this issue based upon brand new information from a whistleblower in the CDC. And we started this discussion a week ago Friday with Dr. Brian Hooker in a new publication in a peer-reviewed journal. And they've just retracted that article. And CNN, which has refused to be at all objective in this, it's as if all of the mainstream media, in complete agreement, are not touching this story. So we have a whistleblower. The whistleblower worked on the study. He is an author of the study. And he has now gone on the record as stating that it showed a 350%+ increase in autism when kids, African-American children, received the MMR vaccine. The very same vaccine that Dr. Wakefield said contributed to autism conditions. Wakefield was right. The scientific community, the CDC, and the media were wrong. Now we have the evidence. Now we have irrefutable proof. So we will revisit this today, the MMR vaccine and autism. You won't want to miss that. If time permits today, I want to do a commentary off a study, or not a study, an article from the New York Times by Thomas Edsel, a good article, entitled The Expanding World of Poverty Capitalism, because it's what he didn't say that I feel is more important than what he did, and I'll offer my comments on that. If time permits, I will also share a plight of many African-American women. I believe that too many African-American women are not given the respect they deserve. But you'll hear from an African-American woman, and for about 5 minutes, who puts this in historical and poetic context. So we have a lot to share. And I want to thank all of you from around the world listening in. And I found more and more people are using our resources to help inform you in ways you would not otherwise know. If you just read the left and the right media, you'll never know the full story. We don't do any of the stories they do. We don't have any of the people they have on this program or putting articles on our site. It's all progressives, people who are looking for the truth, no matter where it is, and willing to share it. Let's begin. In another 3 months, I'll be one of the keynote presenters at a major scientific conference on a clinical study that I did. It's now 3 years ago, where we were able to improve or reverse over 57 different symptoms of menopause, thinning of the skin, graying, hair falling out, eyebrows thinning, weight gain without overeating, fatigue, night sweats, hot flashes, thinning of the bones, thinning of the fingernails, the toenails, fatigue, and we reversed them. It was a holistic protocol, and that's what I'm presenting, the paper on it, to a group of some, I was told, 7,000 scientists and physicians will be there. Here are some things that you can do, because these are all in the protocol, but this is only a little bit of the protocol. But at least for a lot of you having problems, it will help rebalance your hormones, and that makes a big difference. Let's begin with maca. It is a root, M-A-C-A. It's been around a long time. It's primarily from Peru, though other places are known to have it. And it's probably your single most important hormone-enhancing product. You can get it. It's not that expensive. A powder is probably best. And you start with low doses, and then you build yourself up a little bit each month. Here's what we know maca will do. It improves libido tremendously in men and women. So if you're a man having erectile dysfunction or loss of libido, or a woman, both will be benefited without having to take the extremely dangerous medications. Also, energy levels, better mood, and even more fertile. All of those are the best things we can find. But maca does not affect hormones directly. What it does, it helps improve the balancing, especially for the endocrine system. And it helps with anxiety, stress, and depression, and if you have insomnia. Now, another one is called Vitex, V-I-T-E-X. It's also called Agnus Castus, A-G-N-U-S-C-A-S-T-U-S. It's called the chaste berry, C-H-A-S-T-E-B-E-R-R-Y. It's a fruit of the chaste tree, and it comes from the Mediterranean area, principally. It's been used for thousands of years for helping a whole range of menstrual problems, and for women who are pregnant, it actually helps stimulate breast milk if they're having a problem doing that. And it is also known as a fertility. And if you're having dysmenorrhea or amenorrhea, if you're having excessive bleeding, then chasteberry would be one of the things you want to have. But it's also good for irritability, depression, anger, headaches, and pain. And then you have it stimulates release of luteinizing hormone, Vitex, which is the chasteberry extract. And it can inhibit the release of the follicle-stimulating hormone, giving off a progesterone effect. And that can impact the pituitary gland. So there's a lot that these can do, and always best to use them under some guidance. Now, when you consider how many naturopaths, homeopaths, people who are skilled and registered and licensed in their field, that's how I would go about having this. And then you have black cohosh. Cohosh, C-O-H-O-S-H. And it's been used for hundreds of years by Native Americans. It is known to help heal in menstrual and premenstrual syndrome. It's also is an anti-inflammatory. It's good if you have osteoarthritis, rheumatoid arthritis. And if I were to help a person, let's say, who wants to relieve some of the symptoms of osteoporosis, you could combine willow bark, white willow bark, with black cohosh, and it could make a significant improvement. Also, for men in particular, saw palmetto, saw, S-A-W, palmetto, P-A-L-M-E-T-T-O. It helps with benign prostatic hyperplasia, or PPH, which is a non-cancerous enlargement of the prostate gland. A lot of guys have that. And a lot of men are confused when they wake up 4, 5, 6 times a night to urinate. More often than not, that's the prostate. And unless you have it tested, you wouldn't know. But that's one of the things you can use, saw palmetto, to help you with that. It reduces the amount of an enzyme that leads to the growth of prostate cells. So, and it also can help with your testosterone levels. So those are some things that can help. Now, for people who are overweight, who are doing their best, but the fat seems not to be being metabolized or burned, that may be because you're not using lipotrophic nutrients. And you need to support your fat metabolism with lipotropic nutrients. Why are they important? Because they improve fat metabolism. You're able to exercise with greater endurance longer. It helps maintain a better blood sugar balance. So for pre-diabetics and diabetics, of which we have almost 100 million in the United States, that would help them. It improves cardiovascular function. And it improves skin health. So, in fact, I think everyone should take L-carnitine, 500 to 1,000 milligrams before exercising, because it enhances the energy of the heart. It actually helps create cellular mitochondrial energy. It also is produced by your liver and kidneys, but the older you get, the less you produce. And L-carnitine is a bioactive form, and it's a conditionally essential nutrient. Your body's just not producing enough of it. And if you have a carnitine deficiency, it means you don't exercise very long and you're fatigued. And you end up having a poor endurance and muscle weakness and muscle pain. And fat stays on the body longer. Generally, 500 milligrams a day is in a good range to have. But also choline, C-H-O-L-I-N-E, and inositol, I-N-O-S-I-T-O-L. These are coenzymes that are required for proper metabolism of fats and also help with how the body, especially the liver, deals with them. So choline prevents fat from becoming trapped in the liver, where it can block normal metabolic functions. And inositol is also sometimes called vitamin B8, and it helps metabolize the fat and cholesterol and aids in transport of fat in the bloodstream. So those are things that can help you if you are having problems. I once had a person who came to my office, a physician, who was overweight, and he handed me his blood chemistry. He says, I'm overweight, but you know, I'm in great health. I mean, there's nothing wrong with me. And I said, well, you cannot be in great health if you're overweight. You may not see any classical defined symptoms. You may not have high blood pressure, but you can bet that your endothelial tissue is damaged. You can bet that you're having a shrinkage of carotid arteries. You can bet that your heart is pumping harder and therefore prematurely aging the lifespan of the heart. And you're also having a problem since fat accumulates toxins, pesticides, heavy metals, that if you were to lose a lot of weight in a short period of time, you'd be flooding your body with a lot of toxins and you can end up with autotoxemia. Now we can add something else based upon the University of Oslo in Norway. Here's what they say directly from their report. Overweight in anyone causes hazardous inflammations. Quote, researchers have found a possible molecular explanation for why overweight is harmful. This new knowledge may provide new drugs for heart attack, stroke, cancer, and chronic intestinal inflammation. Quote, we believe that there is a connection between metabolism, inflammation, heart attack, and stroke. This is according to the professor at the Research Institute for Internal Medicine, University of Oslo in Norway. And they found that people eat too much, they eat the wrong kind of foods, they end up overweight, they're increasing the immune response. This increase in the immune response causes the body to generate excessive inflammation, and inflammation leads to heart disease, cancer, diabetes, etc. Quote, it is therefore important to keep a balance. Too little and too much nutrition may both upset the immune system and increase the risk. So the takeaway message from this study, which is a good study, shows that just being overweight in and of itself will end up causing inflammation, and the inflammation then contributes to disease. Now, on the one hand, I certainly support the idea that people should not make fun of people who are overweight or put them down in any way. But on the other hand, I think it's extremely counterintuitive and definitely deadly to give people the false impression that as long as they feel good about themselves, they don't have to lose weight. They'll just buy bigger clothes, and hence there's an enormous market today in serving those people who are overweight. So there's a difference between respecting them and helping them versus saying it's okay, you know, you don't have to lose the weight. Yes, you do. You're going to die sooner. And for all those people who want to be more politically correct in their conversation with you, someone has to have an honest conversation. Think back in our lives of how many times we wish we'd had a conversation with someone that we cared about, whether they would have accepted or rejected it. We don't know. But nothing ever gets better unless you address it. From our environmental segment, I've been down to New Orleans filming a lot. And recently when I was down there, I visited the Lower Ninth Ward. And you still have, it's just a complete devastation zone. There's no reason anybody should live down there. Yet people do. But the majority of the houses still have the water lines you see on them. And you'll see X's. You know, and you'll see numbers, how many people died in there. And a lot of the people died, I don't think the public was ever told this, because they stayed in their house until the water got so high that they went up against the ceiling and didn't have a hole in the ceiling, or they were in a lower house and they drowned. Because people pulled bloated bodies out of these houses, they would have been better off going out and getting on the roof of their house. And we also saw people cutting holes in their house. Everything was blamed upon Katrina. It's wrong. Shouldn't have been. It's not accurate. Why? Because you have to also, And we can thank Greg Palast for doing a good job on Op-Ed News of informing us of the actual mileage of land that was taken away. I'm talking about land that is the barrier area, meaning between the ocean and the actual hard land, you have a lot of this wetland. And the wetland is what protects you. It stops the magnitude of the storm. It can bring a Category 3 down to a Category 2. And it also absorbs enormous amount of water that otherwise be hitting. You have Conoco, 3.3 million acres. ExxonMobil, 2.1 million. Chevron, 2.7 million acres. And Shell, 1.3. We add all that up, it's almost 15 million square miles, 15 million square miles in New Orleans area. Now, of course, New Orleans is tiny. You can walk across the French Quarter in, 15 minutes from one end to the other in width and length. So it's going out the Mississippi. That's where the wetlands were, up and down that coast. So what happened? What happened was that it started with Standard Oil, which was what became then Exxon, and they began to bring in giant piece of dredging equipment, and they dredged all that out. They tore out all those mangrove forests, which is the best tree in the world for absorbing water. They cut out all the prairie grass, and because they were putting in their refinery, and these pipes go for miles. So over a period of time, they did that. And then the worst thing they could possibly have done is they got together and they decided, let's make it easier to get to our refineries. Why don't we dig a big canal? And they did. It was called the Mississippi River Gulf Outlet. But for all the local people in New Orleans, they know it as Mr. Go. And it was also called the Hurricane Express. Why? Or Hurricane Highway. Because when you have a canal that's constantly eroding. In fact, I saw a documentary where the sides just kept falling in and falling in and falling in. Well, it's like the calving of an iceberg. It breaks and falls in the ocean, breaks and falls in the ocean. And that's how you eat up these glaciers that are near the water. The land began to be eroded, going back further and further and further. And then you had this huge canal. And it was only really for the gas and the oil industry. Well, along comes a hurricane, and a hurricane takes that water and rushes it. I'm sure you've at some point had a bucket filled with water, and you put a water hose, and the water shooting right up near the side, and the water spinning, and the more water you put, the faster it spins around the tub until it starts to flow over. That's what happened with Mr. Big. And that's where the water comes in around New Orleans. And New Orleans is below sea level. So any surge is going to flood it. They knew this. They were all aware of this. In fact, the governor knew it. The president of the United States knew it. They just didn't want the people to know it. Because had they been honest, they would have told the people, there is no barrier. There is no wetlands. It's all been taken away, so you're going to have to get out, and created a mandatory evacuation. Then you wouldn't have had any deaths. So to blame the 2,000 plus deaths on Katrina alone, without taking into consideration that when you take away all the barrier, then it's like taking away all the trees and having soil erosion on the side of a mountain. What do you expect? Of course you're going to have it, mudslides. One just to share that with you. Tomorrow I'm going to deal with an in-depth look at our cancer industry in the United States and why cancer is just too profitable to cure. Think that's a cynical issue? You'll find out. But now I just want to share with you comments on the history of the African-American women, what they've had to contend with, and then look at this in light of today.
Do you know how strong you have to be to make a black woman smile? Do you have any idea what an accomplishment that is? Because she has borne the weight of this country on her back for 400 years. She's been carrying the load of America in her belly since its infancy. She has suffered the agony of unassisted, husbandless childbearing since the 1600s. Have you any idea how much strength it takes to put a smile on her face? You need the strength of Samson, the nerve of Joshua, and the courage of David facing Goliath. Because she has cultivated in her womb the marvel of the universe, only to have her hopes and dreams aborted and her aspirations show up dead on arrival. She's given birth to kings and queens and delivered on her majestic promise, only to see her children kidnapped and sold to a criminal with no respect for her royalty. If you can make a black woman smile, you are a miracle worker. Imagine breastfeeding your child in Virginia and having him snatched from your arms, branded, then hijacked to Louisiana and publicly fondled on a New Orleans auction block. If the memory of that pain was locked bound in your DNA, would you be smiling? If you breastfed someone else's child only to watch her grow old enough to call you darky, pickaninny, and nappy-headed jigaboo, you wouldn't be smiling either. If you can make a black woman smile, you have done something. If you can make her smile, you are stronger than Atlas, because God knows she has been. She's been raped and ravaged and scorned and nearly annihilated. She's been pimped and pummeled and stoned and deliberately depreciated. She has cooked and cleaned and sewn and never been compensated. She's been forced to watch the offspring of her loins mangled and maligned across centuries. Her character has been continuously smeared, assassinated over and over and over, again and again and again. You ever thought about how strong you have to be just to be a black woman? She's had to make brick without straw after being stripped of all her customs, all her culture, and all her traditions. No other woman in the history of the civilized world has gone through what she's gone through. No other being on the planet has endured what she has endured. She's been chastised, criticized, demonized, and terrorized. She's had to stand when her man was bullwhipped for trying to stand. She's had to stand when her man was castrated trying to stand. She's had to stand when her man was hung by his neck for trying to stand. She's had to carry her man, because every time he tried to carry himself, he was murdered for trying to do so. Ask Betty Shabazz about Malcolm. Ask Coretta Scott King about Martin. Ask Emmett Till's mother. If you can make a black woman smile, you have achieved something. Since 1619, when we came in chains, the entire world's been messing with her brain, disrespecting her, calling her out of her name. And she's tired. Just plain Fannie Lou Hamer tired. Tired of being called B words and H words and N words and other words and everything except the child of God that she is. But the one thing in this world that will make a black woman smile is her man, a real man. If you're doing what you're supposed to do, she will smile. She will smile regularly and gladly. So man up, my brother, man up and make your woman smile. Treat her like the queen that she is. She deserves it. And recognize this: in all of God's creation, there is nothing more alluring, more appealing, or attractive. Nothing more beautiful. Nothing more charming, more charismatic, or captivating. There's nothing more delightful. Nothing more elegant or exquisite. There's nothing more fascinating. There's nothing more inspiring, intoxicating or invigorating. There is nothing more magnificent, nothing more lovely than a black woman's smile.
Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going now to speak with Dr. Andrew Wakefield. Dr. Wakefield is a gastroenterologist. He is an academic specializing in inflammatory bowel disease and the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, or the MMR. He is a former fellow of the Royal College of Surgeons. He published over 130 original scientific papers and book chapters. In fact, he was colleagues at the Royal Free Hospital, London, and they reported on a novel inflammatory bowel disease in children with developmental disorders such as autism. Dr. Wakefield resisted pressure to stop his investigation into a possible link between vaccinations and intestinal inflammation and autism. In 2001, he was awarded the fellowship of the Royal College of Pathologists, and he also was on the board of the American Charity for Medical Interventions for Autism. He also is the director of the Autism Media Channel, which airs on various television stations at autismmediachannel.com. His book, Callous Disregard, Autism and Vaccines, The Truth Behind the Tragedy, recounts his research into autism. Nice to have you with us today.
Gary, it's great to be back. Thank you.
I wanted to give extra time to you today because of recent events. For those in the audience who are not familiar with it, the CNN has released a report, I'll quote, from high-impact news editor comments, while the mainstream media continues to ignore what is becoming the biggest news event of the year, the CDC is scrambling to respond to damaging data that they were forced to release earlier, showing that they had data linking vaccines to autism that they hid from the public. This issue can no longer be hidden since one of the top researchers within the CDC who co-authored several of the studies that supposedly showed no link between vaccines and autism has decided to become a whistleblower. He has yet to make an official statement, and we will hopefully have him on our program next week. The CDC, on the other hand, has responded to Dr. Brian Hooker's newly published study, reanalyzing a 2004 CDC study that excluded data showing a significant increase in autism among African-American boys who were vaccinated with the MMR vaccine. They supplied a response to the Next News Network, admitting they excluded certain data and the reasons for doing so. Next News interviewed Dr. Hooker. We interviewed him last week on this program to discuss the CDC response. And so that's what we know up to this point. We also know that Dr. Hooker's article that exposed this, it was published in Transactional Neurodegeneration, the peer-reviewed journal, and showing a link between autism and the MMR vaccine. But now they have taken the effort of retracting it, redacting it, and otherwise denying the truth of the study. And Sayer G., founder of GreenMed Info, sent a letter to Professor Chen of the magazine, quote, "Your recent decision to remove Dr. Hooker's article published in your journal Transactional Neurodegeneration Online has been cause of great concern among stakeholders in the scientific, journalistic, and legal community here in the United States due to a top CDC vaccine safety expert, William Thompson. confessing under the advice of legal counsel today that the CDC manipulated and or omitted data used in Dr. Hooker's study that falsified a link between African-American children and the diagnosis of autism in those receiving the MMR vaccine before 36 months of age versus those who received it after 36 months. While it is feasible that you made the decision for scientific, ethical, and precautionary reasons, as you state in your journal's website, the decision raises concerns as to your culpability in a cover-up. You should know that your decision is being perceived as a threat to the credibility of your journal and your career as an esteemed scientist. Given the legal implications of your decision to potentially collude with a now-verified cover-up involving the falsification of scientific data related to vaccine science and autism, would you be willing to make a statement to defend your decision? I have copied a wide range of legal, journalistic, and scientific stakeholders in this communication and hope you can clear up what appears to be a precautionary decision on your part, which I hope can be clarified in detail by you. And he goes on then to cite the scientific literature on the problems with the MMR vaccine specifically, and then what it does in causing brain damage also specifically, and he includes several pages of peer-reviewed literature showing the problem with this vaccine. So it's not just journal making these statements. It's a whole lot of people. So take it from there. And because this connects to you, you have been vilified. You have been mocked and ridiculed by Brian Deer and others and CNN. But I believe that there's a direct connection between what the CDC did within malice aforethought. Also, the CDC had one of its leading scientists, a contract scientist, who did over 30, I think it was 32 to 36 studies showing no link between vaccines and autism. And now that man is on the run. He is a fugitive from justice. And so we have false science, we have bad science, we have cover-up, and all involving something that you originally, with your esteemed team, a gastroenterologist, you discovered. Take it from there, please.
Thank you very much. Well, yes, firstly, my enormous gratitude to Brian Hooker, Dr. Brian Hooker, who brought the whistleblower forward and encouraged him to disclose what he knew. This really started several years ago. Back in 2000, we published a paper in the Israeli Medical Association Journal where we were looking at the pattern of exposure to MMR and autism risk. So not just that you were exposed to it, but what age you got it and other factors associated with that, because the way in which we respond to infection depends upon our age, and this is the case for measles. The severity of measles depends on how old you are, and long-term complications are more common in those who get measles under one compared with those who get it over one. So that was the sort of background. So we, Montgomery and I at the Royal Free, put forward this idea that age of exposure to MMR may determine your risk of autism as an outcome. And we shared this hypothesis with CDC vaccine researchers at the Institute of Medicine in Washington, D.C., and at Cold Spring Harbor Laboratories. And they went away and they tested it in the Atlanta metro area, and they found that it was, in fact, correct. Now, the elements of the fraud that they conducted were, one, to change the protocol. They found an effect in 2001 that they did not like, they did not want. They found that there was an association between younger age of exposure to MMR and autism risk. And the further they went into the data, they found that there was a very high risk amongst African-American boys for whatever reason. Maybe some genetic determinant that, you know, conditions your response to the vaccine. So they did something that is scientifically inadmissible. It is outright fraud, and that is they changed the predetermined analysis plan and analyzed it in a different way in order to make the effect disappear. And you will have heard on from Brian Hooker last week. They then got rid of the effect of in African-American boys by halving the number of children immediately, just cutting them in half by saying, we're only going to publish on those who have a valid Georgia birth certificate in order to determine their race. Well, that's absolute nonsense. There is no rationale for that whatsoever. It was done specifically and solely for the purpose of getting rid of the effect they did not want the public to see. And so there were two elements to the fraud, and there they are. And Thompson, Dr. Thompson, was very concerned about this at the time, and there were letters that he exchanged right the way up to the head of the CDC at the time, Dr. Julie Gerberding, who, as you know, then went on to become head of vaccines at Merck, expressing his concern that not only were these data being hidden, but they were due to present them to the Institute of Medicine in 2004, and he did not know what to do. He had no idea how to handle this. He was a senior scientist, but he was not the person who the buck did not stop with him, and he was seeking help from his boss to handle this situation. Instead, what happened is he got reprimanded for writing to her. So rather than deal with the crisis, they went after the messenger. What happened was Dr. Thompson did not present to the Institute of Medicine in 2004 because he was unable to do so. He couldn't deal with this particular issue. He did not want to get up there and lie, and he didn't want to take the responsibility for telling the world that MMR vaccine caused autism, so the data were not presented. The Institute of Medicine then ruled that there was no evidence that MMR causes autism. It was safe to go back in the water. MMR is safe, and so the policy continued, and it continued against a background of senior CDC officials knowing there was a risk. And so for 13 years, they knew that there was a significantly increased risk of autism in black babies, black boys, and they covered that up. And so in the interim, it is likely that many, many children have completely unnecessarily gone to the wall, developed permanent neurological injury because of this cover-up.
Okay, now tie this in with you and your colleagues' earlier work. What did you discover, and how are these two issues, the CDC covering up, even when their now whistleblower, Dr. Thompson, went to all the people, he went right up through that chain of command, clear to the top head of the CDC, nobody wanted to talk about it. Simultaneously to all that, there was a secret meeting in Simpsonwood at a retreat where the World Health Organization, the CDC, the FDA, and all the top vaccine manufacturers met, and they met to discuss what to do about this problem. They found that there was a statistically significant association with autism spectrum disorder, neurological problems, and vaccination. This whole meeting was to decide, how do we deal with this? Now, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., through the Freedom of Information Act, collected the documents, and then we got copies, others got copies, you've seen them, where all those people should have been under investigation by an independent investigator because they met to conspire to conceal evidence, and the media has never once exposed any of them for doing that, and yet that also was part of this effort. Put all these things together for us, please.
Yes, the Simpsonwood meeting was specifically about thimerosal, the mercury preservative in other vaccines, not in MMR, which I believe and many believe interacts with MMR to potentiate the risk. So a high load of mercury in a young child followed by or given at the same time as MMR increases the risk, and that is highly biologically plausible. What Thomas Verstraeten had found in his study was a very high risk of a very strong association between thimerosal exposure in infancy through vaccines and autism risk. And as you say, Gary, that meeting was held in order to massage the data in order for that effect to go away. And this is just part of the CDC's recidivism, is that according to the whistleblower, he told me that when they find an effect that they don't like, in other words, that vaccines are causing a problem, they get into a room and they do not come out of that room until that effect has gone away. And that is the way in which they operate and have operated over many years and for many vaccine adverse reactions, thimerosal and MMR being the two main culprits in vaccines or vaccines specifically. So this is part of an established pattern of behavior by the CDC, but never before have we had a senior scientist from that institution coming out and saying, yes, this is what we did. And you referred to it earlier, Gary, that the update, of course, is that he has now issued a statement through his lawyer confirming in the first paragraph the elements of the fraud, starting, I regret, in my colleagues and I, et cetera, et cetera. So what Brian Hooker said, he said, he now confirms, he said, and the CDC must be in utter chaos at the moment because they know that there is personal joint and several liability for this fraud for the many children who have been damaged as a consequence.
Any government agent that is shown to have committed a criminal act is no longer protected with their clause of immunity. And these would represent criminal acts. Also, from what I understand, over 100,000 additional documents have been taken out, and there's a whole lot more that's going to be coming forth about other problems at the CDC. We do not yet know what they are. I believe the next one's going to be on mercury. But then that brings in all the work done by the person who's now fugitive from justice, who has been indicted and who took millions of dollars to do contract work. And that's what the CDC kept giving to the media, saying, there's no problem with vaccines. Look, all these studies. And now we know that the man who did those studies is a fugitive from justice. And we know those studies have no credibility whatsoever. And yet the CDC has no other studies to give people. And they've never in the history of vaccine science, there's never been a single study where you took 1,000 group of non-vaccinated kids, 1,000 group fully vaccinated, and every 3 months for, let's say, 5 years, track their biochemistry, track their antibody, track their levels of illnesses to show an outcome between vaccinated and unvaccinated. That's the only true way to do it. As a result, they have no proof that vaccines are safe or effective for a given person. Your thoughts, please.
Yeah, well, what you say, Gary, is absolutely correct. And the whistleblower himself has confirmed this, that you cannot trust any vaccine safety studies that come out of the CDC, and particularly those involving Paul Fawson. So the American public must be very, very confused and somewhat disoriented at the moment about who they can trust and who they can't. But from the horse's mouth comes the fact that you simply cannot trust safety studies coming out of the CDC. And part of the conflict with the CDC is that their budget is dependent upon selling vaccines to across the United States of America. You get something in the order of $4 billion a year. And they do that by getting the numbers of vaccinated children way, way up. And yet at the same time, they are there to monitor vaccine safety. You can't do it. You simply cannot do that. You cannot referee your own football match and hope for an objective outcome. And so in that conflict, they have decided to protect vaccine policy, vaccine uptake, their budget rather, than disclose what is an obvious an effect in a subgroup of the population who are at high risk.
Isn't it telling that none of the mainstream media has touched this at all? MSNBC, even programs on Pacifica, popular programs, refuse to touch it.
Well, it's sad but not surprising. The media has become, if you like, a whore to the pharmaceutical industry. I think in non-election years, 70% of network income is from pharmaceutical advertising, so they are dependent entirely on their sponsors. And I remember in an interview with Cheryl Atkinson years ago when she was with CBS, she said, every time I try and do an article, a piece on vaccine safety, vaccines and autism, etc., then there's a call from the top floor saying, can this, because our sponsors have called in and said, if we do this, we will cancel our advertising. So it's not surprising, but it is a tragedy, and that the media in this country has really gone to the dogs. And so it's up to independent people like yourself to communicate the message, because it will not come through the mainstream. There will come a time when someone jumps on it, and like, you know, a pack of hounds, they'll be all over it. And sadly, it'll be too late for many people. And many children, a great deal of disinformation that has been put out. I just saw on CNN this morning the didactic statement from the health correspondent that vaccines do not cause autism. Well, you and I, Gary, know that that's absolute nonsense. The court in this country have ruled that vaccines cause autism, in the particular seminal case of Hannah Poling. And their expert wrote a clear report saying that it did and how it did it. So when you're getting fed such extraordinary disinformation that seems to come from a position of complete ignorance, then what are the people to think?
More than 81 cases have been resolved to the benefit of autistic families, totaling tens of millions of dollars. We have all those cases. We have the families. The special court that is very difficult to get into, very difficult to win in, they won based upon neurological damage, including autism spectrum disorder damages. So one part of the government is actually acknowledging the problem and awarding millions of dollars to the families, millions per family, because you have to take care of that kid for life. And that's what it costs. It costs $2 to $3 million for the lifespan of the child to take, give them medical care they need. And on the other hand, you have journalists from, I can't watch CNN, quite frankly. I find it too painful because of its bias, its lack of objectivity on all things. And remember, they were pounding the war drums for weapons of mass destruction. I don't care what the conflict is, invading Libya and using NATO as a proxy to do it, not taking any responsibility for the outcome. What you're seeing now with ISIS or Islamic State is directly due to State Department Hillary Clinton funding that the so-called moderate terrorist in Libya, who became the moderate terrorist in Syria. And there is no such thing. It's an oxymoron. It's a moderate terrorist. And so they won't call these people out. And on vaccines, the whole country has been of one mind. They're safe and effective. And then you have websites designed to attack anyone who challenges vaccines. If you're a family, and if you had a completely healthy child, a healthy teenage daughter, and she got her Gardasil vaccine and then dies, no one listens to you. The media won't give you any opportunity to tell that daughter's story. So we have over a million victims, a million, who have been impacted negatively by vaccines for the last 25 years. And the American media, the American legislative process, and the American medical community has all stood shoulder to shoulder saying, well, if we had 20 million, 100 million Americans who say they were damaged, it couldn't be because it's illogical. We couldn't give you something. We wouldn't give you something because we promised not to give you anything. It's damaging or non-effective. So by the rule of our logic, you couldn't be right because our logic says we wouldn't succumb to any influence from manufacturers or shoddy science to give you, as a public health policy, including mandatory vaccinations. So do you see the logic, the circular idiocy of how we're approaching this?
Yeah, it's a bureaucratic nightmare, and no one's prepared to take responsibility. They know it on the quiet. They admit it on the quiet. But when it comes to testifying or under oath, they deny it completely. And because they are gutless and they have completely failed the American people, somebody needs to stand up and take a lead on this. And it's long, long overdue. The problem is that the leadership of this country has an interface between it and the American people whom it's sworn to serve, and that is the pharmaceutical industry lobbyists who seem to have the government's ear rather than the people, and that is an extraordinary situation. It's a complete corruption and abuse of the democratic process, and it's time that the American people seize the democracy back for themselves and their children rather than for the benefit of Big Pharma.
I thank you very much, Dr. Andrew Wakefield, for being on, and Dr. Wakefield's website. Which is the website most likely to be able to reach out and share information with you?
I think the autismmediachannel.com is the place people should go. We've moved very much to video communication now, Gary. As you know, it's a very effective way of getting a story across.
Great.
And so that's what we're doing.
Good for you. We look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you.
That's Dr. Andrew Wakefield, and we will be having the whistleblower on the program in the near future, and a major article, original in-depth investigative reporting article on this topic, will be up on our website within the next 5 days. I'm Gary Nolm. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening, and we look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's program. Now let's say hello. Do we have Luann on? No, Luann, let's say hello to Utrece Lead. Hi, Utrece.
Hello, Gary. Citizens of Ferguson, Missouri are asking the United Nations for human rights protection. A national march and political rally by a broad coalition is planned for Saturday. And the New York Times rebuke of Governor Andrew Cuomo explains why Sharpton is not going to ask for a special prosecutor in the Eric Garner case.
We look forward to it right now. Conscious of the People, Utrece Lead. Thank you.